Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 21st, 2015. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
It is hot. It is very hot out.
Yeah, did you not get that in the Move to Florida brochure?
Yeah, you know, they made it sound like it was balmy. they didn't, you know, it's funny, Gene and I walk in the mornings, and we do sort of a power walk. We don't do the, you know, oh, look at that, there's a pretty flower, you know, meandering and sauntering. We really hustle, and we get done like 4 miles in just under an hour. And it's like...
exact same pace I do.
And the reason that we did it in the morning was because it'd be cooler. And it's not cooler. What's going on? I got to walk at like 4 a.m. to... It's crazy out down here. Crazy.
It's funny you mentioned that because this morning's walk, I came back and I told my wife the same thing. And I'm like, wow, I'm just like covered in sweat. And worse, yesterday my walk was like late in the day because I kind of tied one on the night before.
Yeah.
And no one should be allowed to walk 4 miles in 1 hour in Florida at 11:30 a.m.
I know. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. And so, I mean, we used to walk later, but we live right near a school. And, you know, the kids will get out of school, and then you're weaving between, you know, these prepubescent kids who think it's funny to, you know, ride their bike real close to you. And so it's like, all right, we're going to walk in the morning. We're going to kill two birds with one stone here. But it makes no difference. It's hot, you know, and you're grateful for those tall pines when you're walking by them and there's some shade. You know, it's brutal down here. But speaking of Florida, this one choked me up a little, I have to admit, because it is kind of cool, and it... I don't know. Guy Zach from Florida, which is cool too. He's from here. He says he found the Ante Up, and he's talking about the original TBT PokerCast that we did on iTunes, and he's been listening to it. He said he feels like a time capsule because right now he's on episode 61 from August 2006. I really enjoy your show, so I figured I'd do a Google search to see what ended up happening to you guys and the show. Like, was he hoping we would be dead or something? I don't know.
That would be awesome.
he says, congratulations on making it big, and we'll say big is a relative term.
Sure.
For finding a way to make a living doing what you love. Love is also a relative term. I'm going to keep listening, and I think it's pretty cool that when I listen, I know how far you took Ante Up. But you guys have no idea yet. And that is kind of cool. You know, I think about that a lot, too, and maybe in a little more negatively, but when I watch TV or a movie that I hadn't seen in a while or something, and I see somebody in the movie, and I'm like, it's always cool when you go back to watch your favorite movies and you see somebody who's made it big, but it's like their little peon role. They have right. no idea they're going to be Brad Pitt, you know, or you know, or whatever in the future. And not that I'm equating you and me to Brad Pitt, because that's obviously not. But it's just... And when I read it, I just thought, oh, it's so cool. That's actually happening with us to someone. That, I thought that was really kind of cool.
Yeah, I saw Matt Damon in Career and Gender Fire this week.
Yeah.
You know, back when he was just one Matt Damon, not two Matt Damons.
Not two Matt Damons. Yeah, exactly.
That's a good point, though. What I find fascinating about this, and I love it, too, from Zach, is that I was always under the impression, you know, when people ask me, well, why did your wife marry you? And I'm like, well, it's because of a shallow dating pool in Marietta, Ohio. I was really the only one with teeth, so she kind of like, I guess I'll take that one, right? and I always thought that was the same thing with the show. Back when we started it back in 05, you know, why do people keep coming back and listening to this crap, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, there's no other poker podcast out there, so, you know, I might as well listen to this one, right? So here Zach is now in 2015 when this internet thing is actually taken off. It's going to be huge someday, right?
Right.
And thousands of alternatives for his poker listening pleasure. And he is excited to be working his way through those early awful shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also grateful that the Tampa Bay Times kept the shows on their servers and continues to feed there, because I started to put like our old shows on our website, and I thought this is going to take up so much space and time at a time when there was no way I had enough time to do all of them. You know, we were so busy with just me and you doing the magazine and stuff. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to put a couple on here from each year or whatever to show how long the show's been around, but I think they'll get the idea that it's with somewhere else that they can get it. And I'm grateful they kept them on. If they ever took them off, you know, we might not have the audience we have today, and we certainly wouldn't get any newer listeners from those shows, you know, because they'd be gone. And they might even be disappointed when they see that the feed is broken or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And not try to find us. So I'm always grateful for that. But, yeah, I think we hit our stride at the time, though, as far as the show getting better. We did a couple of shows that were just way too long. And when we got into our own thing, we did some long shows, which is why we sort of tailored it back now. But I thought we did okay. Like, episode 61, by then we were doing good, I thought.
Right, but I mean, he would have had to get episode 61 is my point.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. But, you know, I mean, he sees that there's hundreds of shows. He might have skipped, you know, or something.
I guess that's a good point. You could say, hey, these guys are terrible now, but they must have gotten better, right?
Yeah.
Or else they wouldn't still be doing shows. Yeah. All right, that's a good point. And you'll like this, too. I shared this on my Facebook page today, and Matt Nelson, one of our original podcast folks, right? He's like, I can't believe this is still on the Times website.
Yeah.
And he sent the link to the Live from the Tiki Lounge shows.
Oh, no way.
Remember those?
Yep. Oh, my goodness.
Those should not be on.
Those should be
on. These should not be on the website.
Yeah, those should be obliterated, however you can do it with that stuff. And we just think we owe all this to Al Gore.
Yes. You know, he did a pretty good job building this internet. All right, so, you know, everybody's going to think that I have a man crush on Matt Savage because we keep bringing him up on the show here. Honestly, it's just because we're in a slow news period here for poker. I can't find anything else really on the show. And thankfully, Matt Savage is out there giving us content. So he went back to Facebook this week to poll poker players. This time on, he wanted to know what are the two biggest factors for them when deciding to attend a tournament series. And he put, I don't know, what, 11 or 12? 12 different things to choose from on there. The funniest thing was that everybody was like, 7, 8, 6, 4. <He's> like, choose two, folks.
Yeah.
So anyhow, the end, he totaled it up. And again, obviously not a scientific or anything, just, you know, his Facebook fans voting. But the top three were buy-in, location, and structure. And all pretty strong up there. Buy-in, by far the best.
Yeah, and that, to me, it's almost like, hey, you know what? Water's wet. You know, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean, let's look at it this way.
California, it's not.
Let's look at it this way. If they're going to have a tournament series where the smallest buy-in is $25,000, obviously I have to take buy-in into account first because I can't afford to do it.
Right.
So buy-in has to be number one, because if it's crappy, if it's like 50-cent buy-in, you're not going to go because every Tom, Dick, and Joe is going to
be
there.
Awesome.
You know, yeah, you know what I mean? If it's going to be
with
something
unlimited
so cheap.
Quarter rebuy.
Hey, I mean, I wouldn't put that past one of our home game guys to try to run something like that in our tournament. So really, obviously, buy-in has to be number one because you can't afford to go, you're not going to go. And if it's too affordable, you're not going to go. So that's got to be something where you know you can afford it, but it's something that's in your wheelhouse. Or at least there has to be a satellite option that you can get to as well.
Right.
But buy-in makes sense. Location, of course. I mean, if it's on Pluto, hey, they've now discovered there's some action on Pluto. I don't know if you read that in the news.
I did, actually, yes.
There's some action moving around on Pluto. So, you know, poker players in action. But if you can't get there, you're not going to play there. So location, obviously, is number two. It's almost like, okay, you should have conceded one and two and said, okay, let's start with 3, 4, or 5,
true,
you know.
That's true. That's
good. But you take those votes out, I wonder what would have happened. I still think structure probably would have landed at number three. So this is pretty obvious to me, but I don't disagree with it much.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, structure is a tough thing because what one person thinks is a good structure, another person doesn't. So, you know, if he was using this to kind of, you know, help plan events in the future, doesn't really help because I don't really know what that structure means, right? But one of the things I thought was interesting, and I was talking to one of our Antioch Poker Tour host locations this week about this, is satellites. And satellite availability was tied for ninth on this list. Only four people picked that. And Matt was very confused by this too. You know, he doesn't understand. I don't understand. So maybe some of our listeners can help me understand. Why do people not like satellites? Satellites really are becoming a blacksmith shop now in poker. No one's running them. No one's playing in them. No one cares if they're not there. And I find that really fascinating.
I think it needs to be, and this is again, I'm just speculating. But I feel like it needs to be organized more, you know, and promoted more. Here's the deal. Do you remember when we used to go down to all the time?
I knew we were going.
Yep. Right. And Sam, our good friend Sam Minatello, was on that mic all the time. Look, I got one seat left for this 125 satellite into the big main. What's going to have, you know, all these great pros? And he would just, you just push it and push it. And he'd even, like, remember people who had played in satellites before, and he knew that they were, like, game for something like that. He'd look for them at the table, and he'd be like, Joe, come on, you want this seat, right? You want this seat. I mean, he was selling it. So to me, that's an extreme case, but if you said in your advertisement in Antioch Magazine or something of that nature or on your social media, we're designating Monday as satellite day, come on down, get your seat to the main. How could you turn this down? 10% of the field, will, you know, or something like that, you know. But a lot of them, they don't do it that way. A lot of them say, if there's enough interest, when you get 10 seats, we'll run a satellite. And it's like, you know what I mean? Then you're relying on the crowd that's there to change their mind for what they're doing there, the reason they went to that poker room that day, and decide, I'm going to do this instead today. Whereas if their initiative was, I'm going to go there to play in this satellite because I know the satellite's there, then it's more responsive, I think. So I think that could be why it's starting to become this blacksmith industry, like you said, where it's just dying. I don't know. It feels like that to me. I know that when they have it in the ad, it's going to be organized, that they're going to be, okay, people are going to see it, they're going to know about it, they're going to come out specifically for that. And it doesn't seem like they do that enough in their advertising or in their social media or whatever.
That's a good point.
I mean, I don't know if I'm right or not, but that's how it feels to me.
Yeah, well, that's definitely one side of the coin, or probably a big side of the coin. But there's actual players that are talking about, satellite, I don't want to play satellite. And there's some places I go where the poker manager's like, you know, I can't even explain what a satellite is to my players. They're like, huh? I'm playing in a tournament to get into another tournament? Why would I do that? And I guess that's what I'm interested to hear from our fans on is, are you part of that group that just doesn't think satellites are worthwhile? Because I remember back before Black Friday, man, I was satelliting all the time to get in those big Sunday tournaments and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
I would never dream of buying into that 265 horse tournament, but I would play those 26-hour satellites all day long until I got in. You know, you play 10 of them, and you're spending the same amount of money, right? And you got to think, you got a pretty good chance of getting in once in those 10 before you get to that point, right?
Right.
I just think satellites are awesome. You know, maybe it's because, you know, we talked about this before with the chips and the structure, and people just don't know how to play events when they don't have 20,000 units in front of them. And you're never going to get that in a satellite. You know, you're going to start with 5,000 if you're lucky, right? So maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
I thought maybe it could be mindset, too. And what I mean by that is, I'm comfortable playing with the amount of money I can afford to buy in for. Right. So why do I want to try to win an event or a satellite to play in an event that I'm not comfortable playing in? Because I know in my mind, this is hypothetical. It's not me talking. In my mind, I know those players can afford to play in the $550 event because they're better players than me, or the $5,000 event, because they do it for a living and they're great, and I have no right being there. Why don't I just sit back and keep playing my 1-3 cash game and my $75 weekly or daily or whatever? And it's like, I wonder if people think that way. And like, the other thing too is a temptation of, okay, if you play in a satellite and you win it, you want to keep that cash now, because you're generally, you're a $75 tournament player and you just won an $1,100 seat by playing in it, you know, or whatever it is, you know. Now you're like, I got $1,100. Do I really want to risk it in a tournament that I'm over my head in? Or do I just go sell the lanyard or whatever they call it and a lammer? And then, lanyard.
It'd be awesome if they came on a lanyard.
That would be cool. Hey, bro, I'm in the tournament. Look.
Like no, Butler there walking around.
The lammer. And then take that cash because that's your, you're playing above your bankroll. So now you've got this extra money. And because it's there is a bankroll limit, you think, well, this could pad my bankroll for the next 6 months. Why would I want to play this one tournament? So
I guess that's a good point. Yeah, you wanna, you know, if you win the satellite, if you lose the satellite, I guess is kind of what you're saying, right?
Then right.
You barely got any play out of that money, and you got nothing to show for it.
And then if you win it, then you're like, oh man, I can cash this in and play for months right now on my bankroll, my terms, rather than risking it on that thing. And then when the one time you do it and you don't play in the tournament, then you say, okay, I'm not going to play satellites again because I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to play in the tournament, so why would I even try? And then, you know, so there's a lot of, I could see a lot of reasoning for people not doing satellites, but I think if they're done properly, they'll get more turnout and results for them. I just don't think they are.
And one other thing I thought was interesting in this was tied with satellites towards the bottom was Rake.
Huh.
And if there's one thing that you can count on poker players to bitch about, it's the Rake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really interesting to me that only four people mentioned the Rake. So I don't know. I don't know if we've got to the point now where they people just, you know, assume, hey, I got to pay the Rake whatever it's going to be, and this other stuff is more important. Maybe that's what it was. But maybe we're finally to a point where players just realize that it's expensive to run a tournament. And it doesn't do any good. Well, I shouldn't say it doesn't do any good, but at least just an understanding of the business side of poker. And, all right, if I want to play a tournament, I'm going to have to give them a fair amount of money to be sure that they run a good tournament for me.
It could be, too, that it's implied in the buy-in and people didn't get to Rake till later. Cause
okay, it could be, yeah.
Because the Rake is part of the buy-in.
Right, right. That's right. A good point. Yeah.
And so maybe people just didn't get to Rake when they were going down the list and they already voted for one and two because they're so obvious that they forgot or whatever. So that could be some of the way it's slanting that way. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick about structure was, you know, when they say structure is their concern, but that is sort of a subset of buy-in. Because they're going to give you a better structure for a bigger buy-in.
That's true. Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird... This is very difficult to... That's why it can't be scientific. Because these are all subsets of other things. Like, even the guarantee... I mean, there's a lot of way of looking at these things. Expected field size. I mean, how do you know... How can you expect what the field size is going to be? We all expect it to, you know, I mean, it's very difficult to categorize.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes hand in hand with guarantee, which was the fourth, too, because, you know, guarantee, you don't really care about the field size, you care about the prize money. So if it's a big field size, then you know it's going to be a big prize. So I would think players would more likely like just a big guarantee, just know that money's there and I don't have to beat all these people to get it if people don't show up, right?
Right.
Rather than, I don't think anybody gets excited, oh my God, I get ready to beat 2,500 people today. You know, I don't think anybody gets excited about that.
Exactly.
People get excited about, hey, I could win $1 million today. That's a different story. So, but yeah, I think those are completely related.
And the fact that you limited it to two, right, that it you suck a lot of votes out with buy-in location and even dates. Well, dates got 19 votes on fifth spot. When you think about dates, obviously it's important to me if it's on a holiday that I have to go celebrate with my family or something, I'm not going. So dates is pretty obvious. So if you take, obviously, time, buy-in, and location out of it, because those things clearly indicate whether you can go, whether you can afford it, and when it is, you take those out, now you've got almost 200 votes up for grabs to put toward Rake and satellites and stuff. So maybe next time he does it, he takes the obvious ones out.
Yeah, this is tough to do on just a random Facebook thing, but probably be more useful would be to rank all these on a 1 to 10 scale.
Yeah.
How important is dealer staff?
That way everyone votes for everything.
Right. And so if you say you get the satellite, you're like, I don't care about satellites at all. So you give it a 1, right? And then that would be more useful, I think. But again, it's hard to do on Facebook like that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But the best part about it is that he's constantly evaluating. You know what I mean? This may seem like a nice way to get hits and votes on his Facebook page or whatever they call it on there. But for him, you know, he's doing research with this. Because he's constantly trying to make the game better for us, and that's why you have to applaud this. And even though we're kind of ripping apart some of the stuff because of the, but it's obvious, but that doesn't matter. These things need to be addressed and talked about, and he's getting what he needs. So, I mean, you know, kudos to him, obviously. This is an important thing for us, you know?
Absolutely.
Hey, any updates? Harrah's Southern California will award two more packages for our January 24th Annie Up Poker Cruise out of Los Angeles in a drawing they're going to have on September 26th. You can earn tickets in cash games starting September 1st. Also, Dover Downs Hotel and Casino in Delaware will be hosting Annie Up Set Sales Series the next 2 months, awarding 5 Annie Up Poker Cruises in each. The first is September 3rd to the 7th, with cruises awarded during the first break of each event to players in the tournament or cash games, which is really cool.
Yep.
And the second is October 28th to November 1st, with players earning one drawing ticket for each tournament they enter. More details can be found at AnnieUpPokerTour.com. That second one, is that for Port Canaveral?
Yes, that will be for the Port Canaveral cruise. The first one will be for the Tampa cruise. So
excellent.
You can actually win a cruise in each of them and go on two different cruises.
Two different Florida cruises. You'll be seeing us on both of them. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. Comes from Adam B. He's a regular contributor here. And he says, as someone who is a recreational player, is it worth making a weekday, actually during the day, not at night, drive to the card room to play, or is the room just going to be chock full of pros?
I don't know about pros. Rocks, maybe? I mean, generally during the weekdays, it's the older crowd, right, who's just social, and they're not necessarily vast generalization here, but they are not usually the ones mixing up their game much, right?
Right.
So I would say you're more likely to get a little less action if that's what you're looking for. And if that's not what you're looking for, I would probably go in the evening when it's a little more loose and a younger crowd and people are drinking and having
alcohol is flowing.
Right?
Yeah,
yep,
right.
Exactly. I don't know about pros, to be honest. That's a good question. I don't. I would say pros would be there when the games are best, and I would not think that a morning or early afternoon game would be a, you know, fish pond restocked situation for pros. I think they would be there in the evening when.
Right, exactly. That's a great point. It's not a 9-to-5 job. They go when and where the action is. So they're not there 9-to-5 because you're your job 9-to-5. They're there when they can make the most money. And also, location has a lot to do with it. Like you said, if you're in you're in Florida, everybody at that table at 11 o'clock in the morning has gray hair.
Yeah.
And then they're probably there with their retirement, and they're there looking to play a small game, a limit game, or a small buy-in tournament. And they're not loose, fooling around, being crazy. But you could find probably a decent game at 11 a.m. in Vegas because there's tourists there who have been up all night. And
that's a very good point. Yeah.
So it really depends on where you are. But generally, poker pros aren't playing 9 to 5. They're there at, you know, 5, 4, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, trying to take as much money off you as you can, even later, even to the wee hours when you're getting tired and making bad decisions. They're just getting awake and ready to pounce on you. So I really wouldn't put pros on a 9-to-5 job.
Right. Yeah.
But as a recreational player, I don't think it matters when you go, because if you're recreational, you're probably playing at limits that aren't going to kill you, and you're not going to find pros that are, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Either.
You're not going to find a pro playing a 2-4 limit game or a 1-3 no limit game.
Right.
So,
I mean, there are some guys who make a living at 1-3. They grind it, but
really?
They're not having a great living. You know what I mean? You know, they're just getting by.
Those are guys that are, hey, are you going to finish those chicken wings?
That's right. That's right. I'll put this in a bag for my dog. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, these guys aren't grinding at 2-4 for a living. They're just not. They're probably playing in games that you don't even fathom. So, all right, find yourself in a situation or your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antiup group discussions. Comes from Neil. Says, while playing in a one-pound, one-pound casino cash game, I was in a pot of around 200 pounds. Man, that's a heavy pot. He says he was heads up with another player who had him covered. The other player bet, and I shoved. He dwelt up, which that's
I love when our British people
love British. That's awesome. Yeah, that's he dwelt up for a while. After a minute or two, I was pretty sure he was folding, and I moved my cards over the bet line with the cards under my hand. I did not let go of the cards, and I never went near the muck. The other player said, "That's a fold." I said it wasn't, and I moved my cards back and forth over the line. He was getting angrier and kept saying, "Look, his cards are over the fold line." The dealer agreed with me that as I hadn't released my hand, it wasn't a fold, and eventually the other player mucked, and I took the pot without the four being called. After the hand, a couple of regulars said it was a bad ruling and that my hand was dead. I know that in some casinos the betting line on the table is ignored, but in this one, it is enforced. What's the correct ruling, please?
Elliot says, it would appear that the casino in which you are playing has a very strict interpretation of how their betting line is interpreted or misinterpreted. It seems as though it is more of an action line whereby any cards or chips that cross that line are absolutely considered bets or folds at that very instant. This is quite draconian and very uncommon way of enforcing the betting line. It's quite disappointing to read that your opponent in this hand and some of the other players at the table were upset that you were awarded the pot even though your bet was standing and uncalled. In the future when playing this casino, or any other for that matter, please make sure your opponent's cards are in the muck before you move your cards over the betting line. The important concept that everyone at the table except the dealer missed was the fact that even if you're moving your cards across the betting line could be understood to be a fold, the bet you made was your action for your turn in the betting. Your alleged fold was an action out of turn, and even then only to a raise, which will allow you to change the out of turn fold because the raise to you would constitute a change in action. Furthermore, a call or fold by your opponent would have ended the action and the hand then and there, and hopefully render your alleged fold moot. In conclusion, your uncalled bet in the situation should have won you the pot. When all face-down cards over the betting line are dead 100% of the time, regardless of circumstance, neither the players nor the game of poker are being well served.
Nice. And this opens up another question. When do you say alleged and when do you say alleged? I'm really confused now.
Oh,
I don't know.
That's a good point. I like alleged. And it's probably way incorrect, right?
No, I have no clue. I never know when to say which one.
Alleged. I think it's alleged.
All right.
Alleged sounds more forceful, though.
Yeah, alleged sounds like you're pontificating or something. I don't know. But he makes perfect sense. That's a great thing that he brought up, too, was even if you thought he did fold, there's a bet out there and you've done nothing.
Right.
And he's holding on to his cards.
How are you going to get that? Yeah, are you going to be awarded the pot without actually putting money into the pot? I mean,
it's a betting line, not a folding line. There's a lot of stuff going on here that I don't agree with.
Yeah, I'm going to say this is not a casino that you're going to find me in.
No.
Unless it's the only one near my house. And I guess I should say, I mean, obviously the dealer was correct here, and that's what matters. But if I'm at a table with a bunch of players, and this is what Sam used to say all the time, that are looking to win on technicalities, I have made a bad choice in where I'm playing poker.
Yeah.
Because those are not good human beings in my opinion.
Right. And it's not like he was doing anything here to, I mean, later on he might have been taunting him by putting him back and forth over the line, making him angry.
And I think I edited it down a little bit to say that in hindsight he realized he probably shouldn't have been showboating that way. But I would do the same thing. I'd be like, come on, folks.
Yeah.
I'm all in. You can call. I can do anything I want to with my cards here. You know?
Who goes all in and folds?
Yeah.
Without seeing the other guy's hand, and you know, come on, it's just common sense has to rule, which is why they have rule number one in TDA stuff. I know it's a cash game, but you know, rule number one, man, do what makes sense. Don't you know who? I would take that pot in a technicality. That's just crazy.
But you know, this illustrates again this thing that's really given me the red ass.
The red ass. Yeah.
It's this line thing that people are just losing their mind over. You know, is it a betting line? Is it an action line? Is it a folding line? Is it a clothesline? What, you know?
Clothesline.
I'm beginning to think, as ridiculous as it sounds, is when you walk in a poker room and they're like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I went 1-3 no limit. All right, table six. Here's the card to explain our line. Because it's really ridiculous what people think this line is, and probably more ridiculous that some casinos actually do have some sort of enforcement with that. That goes beyond just chips over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many of our listeners that are writing in about the calling it the mucking line or the folding line, or and wow. And, you know, I finally found a casino that does say that. So, I mean, wow, this is all getting crazy now.
It should have it the, you're getting booted from the casino line. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I know it's decorative almost all the time.
Yeah, I mean, we could start with that. We could start with all casinos just taking that stupid line off of yes. the felt. Next yes. time they redo felt, let's just take the line off. It doesn't really help anything. Particularly if you're in a casino where it is just decorative. I mean, now you're really causing problems. Just take it off. Now we can start with that. And then now it leaves these angle shooters less to angle shoot with.
Yes. Crazy. Hey, we have a new O'Malley's move. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing a 1-2 no-limit hold'em casino cash game. The action has been as you would expect a 1-2 game to be. Some solid players, some maniacs, some newbies, and some players who know just enough to get themselves into trouble. The table is 10-handed. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, the plus-one folds, and we're in the MP with the ace of diamonds, king of diamonds, and 125 behind, down $75. We make it 15 to go. The MPs fold, the hijack calls, the cutoff calls, the button and small blind both fold, and the big blind calls. There's $60 in the pot, and the flop comes down the ace of hearts, king of hearts, five of hearts. The big blind makes a bet of $50 into the pot. He started the hand with around 300, and is one of those players who knows just enough to get himself into trouble. He's made several questionable moves, some that pay off, but others that don't. When they don't pay off, he rants for several minutes about how badly his opponent played the hand. So we're faced with a $50 bet and still have two opponents left to act behind us. However, a quick glance over there determines they have little interest in the hand. One is holding his cards as if ready to fold as soon as it gets to him, and the other is watching a baseball game on one of the TVs. So, with this information, what's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. Our good friend David Bloomberg's in a hot seat today.
Hey.
He says, I'm playing one of my usual 1-2 games, which tends to be a very loose, aggressive game. I, however, am viewed as squeaky tight by this group.
Okay.
A couple others who are seen as similarly tight, but most are definitely not. I have the jack seven of hearts in the small blind. It's raised to seven, which he says is a fairly low raise in this game, by a frequent raiser in early position, and there are three callers by the time it gets to me.
Jack seven of hearts. Right?
Yep. Do I stutter?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure this out here. Okay. So where are we again?
We are in the small blind.
Small blind. Jeez. I want to fold, Scott. Are you going to laugh at me if I want to fold this
hand? I'm not going to laugh at you at all. I would actually snicker at you if you did anything but fold here.
All right, I want to fold.
What's the upside of the calling here?
I don't know. That's why I want to fold. Does he have another hand?
We have $1 in. Now you're asking me to put $6 in for a really terrible hand.
Does he have another hand? can we go to another
he
hand?
He actually does, but this all is right. The one where he's in this week.
All right, so jack seven of hearts in a small blind. I would fold. I would never play a jack seven of hearts out of position for the rest of my hand for a raise. I might even fold if I just had to put a dollar in.
Yeah.
This is one of those horribly, you know, 8-9-10 jack makes the, you know, 8-9-10 makes the straight. But you have the absolute worst straight, basically, because you got the jack surrounding it. It's like bookend straight. So even if you make it, you can't possibly make the nuts with this hand. And even if you make a pair, you're a horrible kicker either way.
Right.
And if you make two pair, someone else could make the straight that you're pretending to make, or, you know, with reliable connectors like 9-10. It's just a horrible hand. So, yes, I would fold, and I can't endorse anything other than fold.
My name is Chris Cosenza, and I endorse this.
That's right. But like good political news people, we have to offer equal time to both candidates. So if I'm going to play the hand, I'm going to shove right now and then let them fold. No, I'm just kidding. I really have no idea what they're going to do. No idea. So I'm folding.
Well, it'd be interesting. I mean, if you were really ballsy here, you've got 28 plus the... You got $30 in this pot right now, right?
Yeah.
again, if you're ballsy, I can see you doing a little squeeze here, right?
Yeah.
Raise it to 50 or something and take that pot down.
That's what I was saying, is if I went 3x on the raise, you know... That might get them to fold, but he said earlier it was loose, right? Loose aggressive. So.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem. So.
Yeah, and then you're not going to get anybody to fold, and then you're out of position the rest of the way, and you're going to have to keep pushing it with this jack seven. You know, so really, just
again, remember it's a cash game too. This is what I always think. I don't know why people feel like they have to get fancy in a cash game, particularly 1-2, right? I mean, ABC is the way to crush 1-2, no limits. So
yeah.
That's another reason this is just an easy fold. You know, I don't need a tournament. Yeah, maybe I need to take a shot here and hope that I flop the World's Fair. But a cash game, no. To a dollar, continue watching the baseball game on the tube, yeah. And wait for that next hand.
Yeah.
All right, so he says, I know you had a hand of the week in a similar situation, suited cards that could hit hard out of position in the blind with a raise to only 7, and one of the lessons you suggested was, don't do it! But I hadn't heard that yet when this hand occurred.
Yeah, really, though, I don't think David really needed us to be the ones to tell him that. I think he kind of knew it, but he was feeling frisky in his 1-2 game. I don't think he needed us to be the ones that pointed this out, that it's a bad move.
Don't do it!
Don't do it!
He says, as the previous hand of the week person did, I call, figuring I have good odds and can hit the board hard or go away. Flop is ace of hearts, queen of hearts, 4 of clubs.
Yeah.
And we are obviously first act.
Well, okay, so the only flush hand that would be is some king of hearts with something else.
Really about the best you could have hoped.
Yeah, I mean, unless it came jack-jack 7, you know, or whatever, 7-7-7, you know, this is pretty decent for a flop that has potential. So, okay. Here's the problem, though. If you bet out now, because you're first to act, and even if you want to try to take it down or whatever, take advantage of this strong flop, these are the types of hands that hit everybody. Because someone raised with an ace, someone called with an ace, someone called with suited connectors, someone called with king jack, someone called with king queen, someone called with jack 10. So a lot of people are going to want to see the next card. So... if you bet, the person who has ace-queen, who raised, is going to shut this hand down as fast as possible and have to bet way more than what you put out there. So let's say there's $30 in the pot, and you bet 25 or 20 or something because you're thinking, oh, I'm going to disguise my hand by betting into them and blah, blah, blah. Well, now this guy's going to make it 100 to go, and you're sitting there with the second nut flush draw, hoping... you know, they get there, and you're going to have to probably get in on a shove and do a Cosenza move that sucks.
Right.
So you don't want to do that. So you don't want to bet out. Plus, anybody who has hit this at all is going to want to protect their hand and bet anyway. But at least if you're checking here and then they thin the field with one bet, you can call that bet comfortably rather than having to bet out, get re-raised, and then have to call that raise and then not even get there. So this way, it's just hopefully it's going to be one bet when it gets back to you. You can hem and haw, you can call, and then you get there on the turn, you'll be happy. If you don't get there on the turn, you might pick up a pair or another draw, you know, maybe make a straight draw or something. So I just feel like the move here is not to bet out. It would be one thing if they all limped, and then you hit a hair like this, but guys raising preflop and other callers, an ace is out there, and I just think you need to, you need to play it a little safe here in pot control.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of betting my flush draws because then it disguises your hand a little bit. But I think you made a great point. I mean, this hand hit everyone somehow.
Right, I think so.
Yeah, there's definitely at least an ace out there. You're right, it could be a king-jack situation. It could be another flush draw. I mean, this is a hand that's going to get a lot of action. So I would rather let somebody else kind of set the price here and then wait and see what we get. This is clearly one of his hands. It's almost like a Hold'em Omaha hand here. Because, when you play Omaha high-low and you've got, like, flop comes like this with two hearts, two low cards.
Right.
And then that river, doesn't get there, and everybody's like, ah! But they're staying in all the way because they got so many outs, right? So I think you're right. I don't know how thin this field is going to get with this hand. Actually, I hope it doesn't. So, if that king of hearts comes next, that's going to be great. And, I'm going to check and hope that there's definitely going to be some betting and just hope that it doesn't get too crazy for you back.
Yeah. All right, let's check.
All right. Our hero says, I check with the intent of calling a reasonable bet, but instead it checks all the way around. Unheard of with this group.
Wow. Okay, so that means a lot. Don't you think? That means that people were happy that it checked because no one there is looking to check raise now. There's just no way because it's getting too further into the field for them to check raise. So they clearly checked because they were afraid of what came out, or they wanted to get that free card. So I would venture that there are straight draws out there and under pairs. That's what I would venture, and maybe even a flush draw that is saying, "Hey, I got a baby flush draw, and or whatever. I'm going to take that free card and get there." So by all of those checks, the only other thing is that it could be fishy, but. If somebody hit a set or something.
Right.
But if they hit a set, they wouldn't want to protect that hand. Two broadways and two hearts.
Yeah.
I don't think you're slow playing that hand anymore. You want to get that money now. There's $30 out there in a 1-2 game. That's a decent chunk. That's a third of a buy-in, really, when you play someone buys in for 100. So I think that these guys all are drawing, missed, or have under pairs and are afraid. So and now it's a shame we didn't bet out, but you can't obviously second guess that. You have to just think of what is facing you at the moment. At the moment, it felt like the check was the right thing. If you had bet, you probably would have got them all to fold.
Yeah, so I'm now probably going to bet no matter what happens on the turn. Maybe we'll find that somebody was sitting back, but why not, right?
Yeah, maybe. I guess.
I'm not talking a lot, but I mean, right, we're talking $30-$35 on spot here, so, $15-$20 or something. And
yeah, maybe. Okay. So what's the turn?
Because here's the thing, we can't win this hand unless we hit a heart.
Right.
Or we bet everybody out, so I might as well take control of the hand now and try the first half, assuming I don't hit my heart. And if I do hit my heart, that's, all the more reason to bet. But
yeah, and one last thing then. So the guy who raises preflop, he doesn't bet here. Why doesn't he bet? It can't be that he has a set of aces or a set of queens or even a set of fours because he would have protected his hand. He has to have an underpair. Or something like King Jack, I guess. Or maybe he has King Queen and he's afraid of the ace. But this guy has to have a pair that's under that ace and maybe even under that queen to have raised preflop and not bet that flop. So he's afraid.
All right. The turn is the 10 of spades. So our board now is ace of hearts, queen of hearts, four of clubs, 10 of spades. We pick up a straight draw now. And remember, we're first act.
Okay, so we got King is an out now, and we have Hearts is an out. And like you said, everyone seemed weak, so why not bet? Of course, the longer you wait to bet, the more cards come out, the more cards could hit people, and somebody could easily have, King Jack here.
Yeah, kind of the problem with this card, I talked earlier about probably betting anything. This card actually helps some people, potentially. So, I mean, the reason to bet out is everybody seems scared or weak on the flop, and maybe I could take it down. But now this card actually helps some folks, so this changes my mind a little bit. I think I'm going to check here.
Yeah, I might check too, yeah. I mean, this pot is big enough, that you don't have to bloat it anymore. So if you do hit your hand and you make a small bet later, whatever. If somebody makes a small bet now, it's probably still worth a call because if they're betting now, that means they're probably not betting the same draw you are. And if they are, they'd have to have the king hearts, and they probably would have bet it earlier. So I don't mind betting a little bit here, but like you said, and how I mentioned earlier, if the guy did have let's say he had pocket tens when he raised preflop, now he's turned a set. Mm-hmm. Now if you bet out, this guy's going to shut it down on you because he does not want anybody to get that fourth card to Broadway or that third card to a flush. And he very well would have checked a flop because two overs. So now this hit him. So it does hit a lot of people. It does help a lot of people and in ways that could keep us from actually seeing that river. So I will check two.
All right. Our hero says, I decided that since everybody had checked, I might as well bet my draw, especially now that I also picked up a gut shot. So I bet $15 into the pot of about $35. It looks like this is working as it folds all the way around to the button. As luck would have it, he is one of those few other tighter players, though I've known him to make moves before. However, we play in a lot of local games together, so I feel like I have a better read on him than most people. Anyway, he thinks about it and raises to 40.
I'm going to call that. That's not a lot. 25
more? Yeah, I think
more.
It's perfect price here. What I didn't want to happen was, by betting out, was somebody raising and then re-raising.
Yeah.
And then having it 100, 150 when he gets back to us with a sweet draw. But for another 25, sure.
Yeah, and you'll be heads up with this guy, and you might make it straight, or you might make... So the other thing then is, I guess it begs, what did he make that he could raise us? Did he make a straight? Did he make a set? Was he slow playing a set? And just took the chance, you know, is our flush going to be good if we get there, you know, because what if it gets there with the four of hearts and this guy had a set of, well, turned a set of tens or had a set of queens, but I think it seems more likely that we can still win with our hearts, so.
I think the fact that he's raising here makes me golden on any of our routes.
Okay.
I think if our heart gets there, we're golden. I think if our straight fills in, we're golden.
What if it was the ten of hearts?
I mean, really, the only thing I'd be scared about here is he has the king jack of hearts.
Okay. No, we had the jack of hearts.
Oh, that's right.
King, yes, ten, king ten of hearts. King ten of hearts. And that could be why he bet it, too. He hit the ten.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, king of ten. I don't know how you raise for that, though.
Yeah,
yeah, so you're right. I think you're right. I forgot that we had the jack of hearts. So, yeah. No, I think all of our outs are good right now.
All right. The only thing that scares me,
it might be a split pot, but that's fine.
It does scare me if he was slow playing something like a set, because
but
then,
even that. But our outs are good though.
Well, no, a four of hearts or a ten of hearts would make him a boat. True. So that's the only thing I'm worried about is the boat pairs with a heart, and then it makes a boat versus our flush. But other than that, I mean, that's pretty precise too. We're sort of splitting hairs here, so I have to agree with you. I generally think any heart would probably give us the winning hand. So. For 15 more, what it was, 25 more?
25.
Yeah, I'm going to probably call that. Because now, there was, 35 in the pot. We put 15, so that made it 50. He makes it 25 more, so that's 75. So 3-1 on my money. I'm doing it, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's do it.
No, all that being said, I think we have to hit. There's no
Yeah. I mean, we can still hit a straight, too. So the straight would be good,
Jack or 7 is not going to be good enough for us.
Right,
so,
no.
But yeah, it's worth it, so. I think. Let's find out.
Okay.
It says, despite what I said about having a read on him, I'm not really sure what he has here. Was he sitting on a flop set of fours? I think he would have bet the flop with a draw all he board. If he had aces or queens pre-flop, I know he would have re-raised, so it's not that. Maybe king-jack turning the straight? That seems to be most likely. In that case, I have to call a 25 into a pot of 90, not quite 4-1 for a chance of hitting a flush. But there are also some implied odds that make it worthwhile, so I call. I'm not so sure about the implied odds. I think if a heart comes here, you know, we're going to have to bet kind of low to get him to call.
Right.
We'll see. The river is the four of hearts.
So no. That's exactly the card I was talking about.
Ace of hearts, queen of hearts, four of clubs, ten of spades, four of hearts. So the good thing is we hit our flush. The bad thing is the board paired.
Oh, man. This is...
Action killer, isn't it?
It's hand of the week. Bom, bom, bom. We should have like music tied to that.
Because at this point now the pot's 90, so I was excited to hit my flush and try to squeeze some money out of him. You know, I'll check and gosh, hope he doesn't bet too much.
Yeah, I have to check. I mean, I realize we made a flush. First of all, it's not the nut flush. Okay, it's just not. So that has to give you some.
But again, I can't imagine him raising on the turn with it. So I feel that the flush is the best flush out there.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of whether he turned a set of tens. Because I think you're right. I think he's right. It's really hard to imagine the button not betting that flop with a set.
Right. So if he turned the set, he still has a boat.
Right, but that would be the only thing. Otherwise, that I think the King Jack is the most likely thing, and we have that beat now. So,
ugh.
I'm feeling kind of confident here, just not confident enough that I want to poke the bear.
Yeah. Oh man.
Probably gonna call whatever he bets, but
yeah, if he doesn't do anything crazy, I would just check and call like a $50 or $40 bet or something. If he shoves on me for like a 200 or whatever it is, then I have to really think about it. Yeah, or if he makes some enormous bet that's not a shove, I still have to think about it. I'm going to check and call. It's a big enough pot that a check call is warranted.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'll take down $90 plus whatever he bets. And
yeah.
All right. Here says, if he really does have a straight, I don't want to check and risk him checking it back. So I want to bet for value, so I lead out 35. I'm not so worried about losing value at this time.
No. I don't think so either. Because, again, you lose value on hands that are clear winners. You know what I mean? I don't know if you can lose value on this hand where a ton of hands still beat us. I know there's not a lot of hands that you can put them on. But pocket fours beats us. Ace four beats us. You know, there's no reason why we can start to entertain ace of spades, four of spades. You know what I mean? We can entertain hands like that now by the way he played them. You know, he was on the button. He called, you know, a raise. You know, it wasn't like he made the raise. So, a suited ace four, but he doesn't have top two. Then he bets the turn because now he was slow playing. And who knows? I mean, I have no idea what this guy's thinking. So, there are hands that beat us that are pretty obvious that beat us, too. The turn set of tens. Now he's got a boat. So, I'm happy with the value we're getting for the hand, the way we played it. We were in a blind, by the way. You know what I mean? So, you're lucky to even have this opportunity. I wouldn't want to spoil it by losing my whole stack with Jack 7. So, I wouldn't have bet, but 35, if he gets re-raised now, what is he going to do?
And that's exactly what happens. He raises 90 on top of that.
Wow, 90 more. So that's $125 on not even close to the nuts. Oof.
That's incredibly ballsy on his part if he's running a bluff here, or running something that's less than what we have. I mean, he's got to see the flush.
Yep, he has to.
He's got to see one of the two of the things, right? So he's got to think that.
And twice he raised us.
Yeah.
After we bet into him. He's got to have us beat. How could he afford to do that unless it's some baby flush? But even then, he would be happy to call the 35 with a baby flush. He wouldn't re-raise us with a baby flush because it would look like we're drawing to a flush too the way we played it. So he has to have us beat. He has to have a set of tens and turn the boat. There's no other hand here you could do that with. Because he wouldn't have done that with aces or queens. He would have re-raised pre-flop. The 3-4s he would have bet on the turn before the turn because he would have protected his hand. And he wouldn't have re-raised or just raised us the minimal amount that he's raising, basically, with this earlier bet, not the one he did in the end. And he would have bet more to take it down with a set. This guy has to have us beat. He has to have something like 10-10 now, and it's over. This hand is, it has to be. I have to fold. I have to fold.
And I'm not, I promise you I'm not looking ahead to see what happens here, but I'm going to make the point that, remember back pre-flop?
Yeah.
This is always the problem with these hands, is they seem innocent in the knock at the point, at that time, and then they turn into monsters. And this is a monster now.
Yeah.
And when we call this 90 and lose, look at all that money we invested on a Jack 7, suited Jack 7.
That had no chance of making the nuts unless the King of Hearts came on the river.
Right.
No chance of making the nuts with this hand. And it's just not worth it. Really, you should add it up. So what? Preflop was 7, and then it checked around. Then we bet 15, but then he raised to 40, so it was 47, and then what was it?
You bet 35 here.
35. So you've already, we're already into it.
$82.
For 80, yeah. So, and if you had to call 90 more, you're getting $170 or so on a Jack 7. That's not even the nuts. Got to get away from these hands, especially when you're out of position the whole way. That's the other thing, too, is not being out of position is biting you on the ass, too.
Right. That's the worst part, right?
Yep. So I think I'm folding. I don't think anyone can make that raise and play it the way he's played it without having a full house now. I can't imagine.
I agree.
It.
Yeah.
Unless he's got some weird King of Hearts combination. King of Hearts, Ten of Hearts. That was the other hand I thought of. But even that, can he really afford to do that with the board pairing? He doesn't know that we don't have a set of fours that turn into a full house or something. So, I gotta fold. I can't even call.
Yep, I agree. Now, I wonder what would happen if we didn't lead out. Would you bet 50, maybe?
Yeah.
50, yep. I would have called, right?
Yep. Yep. Yep, there you go. That's the other thing, too. Why
see,
are you we
were trying
out?
To get value, and I think we ended up costing ourselves an opportunity to win this pot.
Yep.
Because if he is running a bluff here or not understanding the board or something like that, we're going to have to fold here. We're not going to get a chance to see it.
Yep.
Whereas if we checked and he bet 50, we would have called and seen it, and it would have cost us 15 more than it is here. But I would bet... I would wager 15 to see what he has and maybe win this hand.
Yeah.
90, I can't do it.
Yep, I agree. Oof.
All right, Ariero says, I run through the possibilities. Does he have the straight and think I'm bluffing? I feel like my image as a type player does not include that type of action. Whether I would actually do it or not is not the issue, but whether he believes I would do it is. If he is raising here, he thinks he has me beat. But does he? Could he have a lower flush? I still wouldn't see him raising with that. But he might raise with the nut flush, or I guess something like ace-4 hitting a boat.
Right, that was one of the hands I suggested was ace-4, and that could still be a possibility, too.
Yep. It all comes back to the way the hand played out. I just don't feel like I have the winner. At the very least, he believes he has the winner, and I eventually come back to believe the same thing, so I fold.
Oh, good. Well, I think. I don't know. It's always just that most of these hands always end up losing, so I'm glad he got away from it.
He shows me 10-10.
10-10, yes.
The set on the turn, which is why I come alive then, and then the perfect river card gave me the flush and him the boat. Ouch. But at least I made the right fold on the river.
Yeah, he did make the right fold. But there were some mistakes along the way, and I shouldn't even say along the way. There were some mistakes before this hand got started. You should get away from that hand. You know, Jack 10 of hearts is one thing. Jack 7 is a whole new ball game, and it's one that I don't want to play in.
Yeah, this is totally the horror movie at the theater, right?
Yeah.
You know, you see what's going to happen, and they don't see what's going to happen, and you just know what I mean. I mean, you said 10-10, right?
Yep, that's what ended up being. Jeez. Wow, I called the four hearts and a 10-10. That was awesome. Yeah. See, sometimes I know what I'm doing. Not often. It's variance is all it is. It's variance. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.